Show. What's up? I'm your host, Mark Boucher, broadcasting live from the MoFit headquarters in beautiful, sunny, although it's dark now, but beautiful summer sunny Cocoa, Florida. With me as always, soon to be with me as always, is the beautiful, lovely, and talented co-host, Christine Hetzel. Christine is actually, with her day job, she is currently working at Daytona Bike Week. It's Bike Week at Daytona, and she is up there doing the Bike Week thing. So, co-host she will still be, but, we have to all understand that she's doing something else. She's going to be up there staring at chicks in bikinis and guys with motorcycles and probably chicks with motorcycles. What's up, Christine?
Hey, what's going on? You just made me laugh. That's exactly what I'm doing, staring at chicks in bikinis and guys in bikinis for sure.
Not guys in bikinis. Hopefully not too many guys in, well, hopefully not. I'll just leave it at that. So how's Bike Week going so far?
So far, so good. We're out of the speedway for my job, and I've got to be honest, I am stoked. I mean, it is just amazing. Seeing everything that's being set out here is just super cool.
Yeah. I wish I could make it. It doesn't look like I'm going to be able to. A buddy of mine, though, owns a ice cream shop right there in the middle of everything. I'm looking up the name of it. I should have looked that up ahead of time. But my buddy Mike owns, what is it? Blah, 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 blah. I'll look it up. I'll find out. We'll come back to that. But a buddy of mine owns a ice cream parlor right there in the middle of like where all of the vendor tents and everything are going to be set up, which I imagine is where you are, right?
Actually, no. There's about 4 to 5 different places during Bike Week that are pretty main vendor setups. I'm assuming he's probably on like front where
I'm looking it up right now. Yep.
Yeah, we're not set up there. We're here.
You would think he would have it listed on his. I'll bet you he has it on here. Hold on a second. Let's see. He lives in Daytona Beach. I'm on Facebook looking at his page, but I don't see the name of his ice cream shop on here. Oh, well. Screw it.
Well, we were trying to give him
anyway,
a plug.
We were trying to. Mike Panzer, if you're listening, give us a call and plug your ice cream shop there in Daytona Beach. The telephone number, speaking of giving us calls and so on and so forth, the telephone number to get into the show here is area code 347-857-2793. I'm the host, Mark Boucher. Christine Hetzel is the other voice that you hear. She is doing 5 jobs at once, co-hosting the show with us and also working Bike Week for her day job up there in Daytona. So let's dive straight into the show. The first half of the show, we talk about some fitness stuff, some fitness news, anything fitness related. Second half of the show, we bring in a guest. This week, our guest is Allie from 26.2 CrossFit here in Florida. And Allie's got a unique bend on the CrossFit philosophy, and that's what we're going to be talking to him about. So that'll be coming up at 7:30. And the first story I'm going to talk about tonight, Christine, just begs for comment from you because it is the New York City Marathon.
Yay! Well, I was one of the very lucky small percentage that was granted entry through the lottery. I am beyond excited. Yeah, exactly. I literally squealed and screamed where people thought that somebody had shot someone or there was some kind of something going on in my office when I found out that I was in the actual marathon. So I'm very excited about it.
That is so awesome. Have you heard how many people are going to be in the race this year?
I assume that it's their usual, typical, about 50 to 52,000 entrants and runners.
Okay, cool. Yeah, last year I saw that last year's was 55,000, and that's just an insane amount of people. I mean, just picture 55,000 people, you know, in your bedroom or in your kitchen.
I don't think they'd fit, but hey, they're more than welcome. The more the merrier.
The 55,000 runners last year, I was kind of doing some research trying to find some audio, some sound for the New York City Marathon Lottery for the show for this week. I didn't find anything for that, but I did find this, and this is kind of neat. This is from WPIX in New York City. They're one of the big network TV stations in New York City. And this is from WPIX in NYC going back to 1978. Give this a listen.
What is CrossFit for Kids in a nutshell?
I hit the wrong one. I am extremely sorry. Yeah, no. We're going to be talking about CrossFit for Kids later on before we lead into our discussion with Allie at 7:30. But here we go. This is from WPIX going back to 1978 in New York City.
More than 2 million New Yorkers were on the sidewalks and streets of the city's five boroughs today to witness what has become the largest single spectator sporting event probably in the world, the New York City Marathon. The marathon began here in 1970 with 126 contestants. Today, just under 8 years later, there were 11,231 entries waiting for the starting gun on the Verrazano Bridge. They kicked off at exactly 10:30 on a... where they put the finish line. There were thousands in the park waiting for the runners to finish. More than 8,000 were expected to, and some are still running. This marathon could have taken a turn for the worse, literally, if three wags from Queens hadn't been stopped. They were painting a new blue line leading away from the official blue line that guided runners off into the untracked wilds of Queens. Police booked them on criminal mischief. But for the thousands who toiled through the streets of the five boroughs, there weren't any jokes. Bruised feet, blisters, and these were the least of the ailments afflicting those dedicated runners who were just out to see if they could finish the course, or even half of it. In our marathon special report last week, we told you that Action News reporter Jeff Kamen and our news editor Peter Landis were going to test themselves against the 26 miles, and we're happy to report both finished the race. Jeff Kamen in 4 hours and 4 minutes, Peter in 5 hours and 7 minutes. And congratulations to both of them. Well done. And Jeff called to tell us that the people who lined the route offering ice and orange juice couldn't have been more kind or supportive. He says, for today at least, New York had a new face.
So that's some cool sound coming out of WPIX in New York City. My favorite line of that, the three wags from Brooklyn.
Yes, that cracked me up for sure.
Not sure what wags are, but I can only imagine that in this day and age, you probably couldn't get away with saying that on network television. So what do you plan to do it in? What kind of time are you shooting for when you run it this year?
Oh, God. Well, I'm not a fast runner. I've already alluded to that or have just straight up said it several times. My Chicago marathon time was 4:40. I would love to do this in 4:30. It's a little bit more of a difficult course, obviously, than Chicago because that's an extremely flat course. But, you know, it's one of the things where I definitely want to have a good time, but I also, meaning I want to come in at a good time, but I also just want to have a good time. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I don't foresee myself doing it again. So whatever I do it in, as long as I finish, and I'll be happy.
Well, I'd love to hear from anyone else running the New York City Marathon or anybody that would just like to comment about it. Telephone number to be part of the show if you would like to do that. Area code 347. 857-2793. What's the date of the New York Marathon this year, Christine?
It's November 1st.
Okay. So weather shouldn't be a problem for it. I guess it could potentially snow, but I mean, in the beginning of November in Chicago, of course, snow is a possibility, but not the big giant blizzards. They usually happen later on. I was doing some more research on that, and I saw that there was an ultra marathon in Fort Worth, Texas, where you would not usually think about weather, killing an event like a marathon or an ultra marathon, but it did just that. The Cowtown Marathon in Fort Worth, Texas, the marathon and the ultra were both canceled. This was back on the 23rd of last month because of snow. And I guess the roads and potholes, and it just wasn't passable. The only race that they actually held was the half marathon, because that course, I guess, was fine. But the ultra and the normal marathon just canceled just because of the weather. But in Texas, of all places, I know they get snow in Texas, and they get some freezing rain every now and then. But what do you think about that, Christine? That sucks for them.
The only time I've actually ever seen snow, because I'm a native Floridian, and I traveled up to Colorado in January and was disappointed because I didn't see snow. But the first time I saw snow was in Texas.
Yeah. Well, I know they get snow, and this particular storm that went through, too, it stretched from New England all the way down through Arkansas and into Texas, and it was nasty, and it canceled an ultra marathon. I know probably lots of people very bummed about that.
Yeah,
so,
well, you know, obviously everybody remembers, I think it was Sandy that canceled New York Marathon a few years back. So that was kind of a, well, it was a huge deal in the running community because it's a very big race. So it does happen.
Yeah, and I think the hardest part of a race getting canceled because of natural events like that, you know, because of natural circumstances, it's typically a pretty big challenge from a public relations standpoint from the organizers of the event to try to, you know, drill home to people that aren't doing the event why it's not happening. Because a lot of times, a lot of the expenses that go into putting on an event like a marathon are still there, even if it's canceled because of weather. So people don't get refunded on those a lot of the times. Sometimes they do if it's possible. But this past summer, I was back in Tennessee to run a Tough Mudder. And the Saturday Tough Mudder went off without a hitch. Fortunately, I was scheduled for the Saturday one. But overnight, from Saturday into Sunday, much like happens in Tennessee quite often, a tornado tore up the course. The Tough Mudder course just got annihilated by a twister. And so, obviously, it was canceled, and they weren't issuing refunds, and everybody was extremely pissed off. And there's not much you can do about that.
Did they, by any chance, offer them a future entry?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. I don't know. That would have been kind of cool if they did that. But I don't remember if they did or not.
Yeah, that's what New York Marathon did. They ended up giving people the opportunity to come back out with a guaranteed spot for like 3 years consecutively, because obviously not everybody can take on the expense of going back out there just the following year. So they gave people an opportunity over 3 years. They kind of spread out the people to the point you couldn't have handled that better, because really, what are you going to do?
Yeah, no doubt. No, that's real cool. I'm glad that one had a happy ending. Here's another one that may or may not have a happy ending. I guess time will tell as this plays out. But one of the other obstacle course races that's a giant presence in the obstacle course race sphere, if you will, is the Spartan Race. Equally as big as the Tough Mudder circuit. I don't think they net as much revenue over the course of a year, if that's how you're going to judge the size of the series or not. But Spartan Race, definitely a very, very popular race. And last year, they ran a race in Tampa, Florida. And a local Tampa TV station did some researching into the charitable giving that the Spartan Race either did or didn't do. Spartan Race and Tough Mudder and all of them, it's usually part of how they justify having these big, giant entry fees. I know I've paid well over $100 almost every time I've ever participated in a Tough Mudder. Spartan Race, same deal. And so they all have their charities and charitable organizations that they give to. And that's part of the reason why it costs so much to get in here. And it's the same, I'm sure, with the Boston Marathon and the New York Marathon. And pretty much every race you run does that. Well, I got some sound here. This is from TV station in Tampa, Florida, and this is talking about Spartan Race's charitable givings and or lack of. And, Christine, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this one after the sound.
When Spartan Race held its inaugural Spartan Sprint Special Ops Race at Ray J last year, it billed the event as a fundraiser for local military charities. For-profit races, like Spartan, often partner up with local charities to help participants rationalize expensive entry fees. Some racers paid more than $100 to compete in this one, but 10 investigates found the company's charity donations here in Tampa totaled just 33 cents per competitor. We flew to Boston, where Spartan's founder admitted the totals were disappointing, but he said they'd be much better this year.
We'd love to give a nice portion to charities. We'd love for all our employees to donate to charities, but more importantly, we'd love for all our participants to donate to charities.
The good news is, after we called the company out, Spartan has made it much easier for participants to donate directly to charity. Those contributions have gone up fourfold since. But the bad news is, despite a bevy of new national television and marketing deals for the company, their direct donations to charity have barely increased.
All right, if you have a comment on that, 347-857-2793 is the telephone number to be part of the show. Christine, any thoughts on that one?
You know, I find it hard. How do these races give to charity? Because after they take in their expenses and what comes in, I don't think there's a huge profit margin for them at all.
Right, Right.
So
yeah, I know
in
the case of Tough Mudder. Yeah, I know, and that's an angle. Of course, this news report didn't really touch on any other angle than just the numbers. Here was the number last year, and then of course the soundbite from the founder of Spartan talking about how he wishes it could be better. And he made a good point about, you know, participants donating to charities as well. And the first thought that comes to my mind is typically the person that runs a lot of races and events in the course of a year, just the fact that they're doing that means that, you know, you've got some expendable money in your own personal cash flow. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to do that. But at least in the case of Tough Mudder, they always put up sort of a sponsor page that you can post to your Facebook page, your Twitter page, or whatnot. And it says basically, hey, I'm running a Tough Mudder in October this date. And, you know, please sponsor me on my Tough Mudder and donate to, in the case of Tough Mudder, it's the Wounded Warrior Project. I don't remember who the Spartan Race benefactor is, but it's the Wounded Warrior Project for Tough Mudder. And I always do that. I always put up a link and, you know, sponsor me as I'm running it. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I think most people who do these kind of races are always a little bit personally involved in trying to either raise funds for a specific cause. I know I have in the past. I've done a lot for MS. And actually, Jennifer, a good friend and a fellow Ragnar member of ours, wasn't able to get the lottery slot for New York. So she's going to be raising $3,000, which is about $3,000
that
she can run New York City.
That is awesome.
For sure.
That is
so
very, very cool. Yeah.
I will be sharing that link if anybody out there is on my personal page and wants to help her with it. I believe it's a breast cancer research fund that she's working with. I know that personally hits very close to home and her family life. So I'm excited for her, and I can't think of anybody better than her to actually be able to raise that kind of a fund.
Awesome stuff. Coming up on about 10 minutes or so before we bring in our first guest of the evening, actually our only guest of the evening, it's going to be Allie from 26.2 CrossFit. And you can visit his website and check out his gym or box, depending on what you call it. 26.2CrossFit.com is the address of the website for his gym, and I encourage you to definitely check that out. I also encourage you to call in to this show. Be part of the show. If you want to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, the New York City Marathon, the Spartan Race, and charitable giving, weather, canceling events. Maybe they've canceled an event that you've been part of in the past and you were not happy about that. Love to hear your thoughts on it. The telephone number to get into the show is 347-857-2793. This is The Mo Show. I am Mark Boucher. The other voice you hear is Christine Hetzel, who is just, she's got boots on the ground up there in Daytona for Bike Week. She has a much better view than I do. I'll describe my view right now. I'm looking at my Flonase inhaler. I can see my cell phone. My iPhone is on my desk here. I've got a little bottle of water where I spray the cat when it jumps up on the counter. By contrast, Christine, you are looking at chicks in bikinis.
Yes, it is definitely not the worst job in the entire world. Not to mention getting the opportunity to hire promo girls. It's also not so bad.
Yeah, I can hear that. So the Mo Show is here. It's heard every Thursday night at 7 o'clock right here at MoFit.com. You can also tune into us at Blog Talk Radio, and links get posted all the time on all of our social media outlets, the Facebooks, the Twitters, and the Instagrams. Both Christine and I, if you are personally contacted or connected with either one of us, then you've probably heard nothing but Mo Show for the past week, and I do apologize for that. The telephone number, once again, 347-857-2793. Coming up at 7:30 is Allie from 26.2 CrossFit. So, Christine, you do a lot of running. So do I, and a lot of people listening to the show probably do a ton of running. Let me ask you this, and this is just a personal thing. When you run, are you bored?
Wow. Longer distances, summer training for a half marathon, I did it by myself. Yeah, I remember one run specifically where I started thinking, I should do my grocery meal planning this week while I'm running, and I did. It worked out actually quite perfectly. But the summer after that, I trained with a group of girls. So it was honestly, get a running group, get a running buddy. It's the best way to go.
Yeah, what do you do to stay, you know, to stay interested while you're running? I know that listening to music is a popular thing. I like to do that. Listening to books on tape, I think, is also a great idea. I haven't tried that yet, but it's on my list of things to try. I just like to rock out to good old classic rock and roll. AC/DC is all I need to power through a half marathon. What do you do?
I listen to music, absolutely. I cannot listen to books on tape. I tried it once. It was actually, to me, my absolute worst run ever. I get really roasted. It was horrible. It was so, please, if there's anything that I can say to people, do not listen to a book on tape. Actually, I know quite a few people who do. It just didn't work for me. I get really engrossed in my books and the characters, so it was too weird for me. It didn't work.
Yeah. That's interesting. What about that? There's an app where it's kind of like a Runkeeper app, but there's a storyline that gets narrated in the background, and it's zombies that are chasing you. Have you tried that one yet?
I have that one, yes. And actually, I posted a story to my fitness page on Facebook a week or so ago on it. The creator of the Run Zombie app or Zombies Run app is somebody who I guess most people would not consider athletic. She's actually a bigger framed girl. And She said that it was something that she created to kind of get her out there and get her moving. And although she didn't necessarily lose weight, it did help her health substantially. So she's not motivated by becoming thinner. She's just motivated by getting out there and staying healthy. Now, I, again, was Run Zombies app. It doesn't work for me. Music just seems to be my go-to default.
Right. Was it scary at all? I know that some people are actually a little bit terrified by it.
No, they do have a warning, as I guess everything has to have a warning nowadays. It didn't frighten me at all. Zombies don't scare me that much, so it was fine.
Well, the reason I brought up the whole boring thing is because in Hong Kong, of all places, they just had one of their first ultramarathons there. And, of course, an ultramarathon, just for clarification for anybody who's not sure what we're talking about, an ultramarathon is basically defined as any race that's longer than a marathon. So 26.2 miles is a marathon. 30 miles would be an ultramarathon. 50 miles would be an ultra. 100 miles would be an ultra. There's all kinds of different kinds. In Hong Kong, they had one. It was the first inner-city ultramarathon in Hong Kong, and despite organizers describing it as quite boring, they still had an amazing where did I say in my notes? They had like – here it is. Ready for this, Christine? Guess how many people ran in the first Hong Kong inner-city ultramarathon? It's a staggering amount.
Oh, really? Well, it's a big population out in Hong Kong, so
– Yeah.
But I feel like I'm being led into, it ended up being like four people. Was it four people?
No, it was a little more than four. It was 125 people.
I think that's actually a good number for an ultramarathon. They're not exactly the most well-attended races out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. And to the topic of it being boring, there was one stretch of the race that was on one road, one continuous road that was 25 miles of the race, just one straight stretch.
That would be a little tough, for sure.
Yep. All right, telephone number. Our guest will be calling us in. Will be calling in shortly to talk to us here in about 5 or 6 minutes or so. But I would love to hear from anybody listening to the show. 347-857-2793. That's how you do it.
You know, I'm going to talk a little bit more on the ultramarathon. We have two in the Space Coast that I've been fascinated by. I believe they're both by invitation. One is created by one of our local running legends, Matt Mahoney, and it's out at Wickham Park. So if you want to talk about boring, that one sounds incredibly boring to me, and it's in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
And the other one is over at Enchanted Forest, and that one doesn't sound exactly thrilling either. I spoke to an ultra runner who did that one, and he said it's basically just a 3 to 5 mile loop, and they do it 50 times. it sounds insane to me, but he said it works out perfectly because he uses his car as a pit stop, and it's actually easier to maneuver that kind of a looping race.
Yeah. I don't know. I would think, I mean, one definite merit to doing it that way is that if you have a, you know, you can have your water and food that you stash for yourself right there at the beginning, and you're going to go buy it 50 times. So it eliminates that aspect of the ultramarathon.
He said he used his car as an aid station. He had everything there. It worked out perfectly. If he needed to change, he could change right there. So I guess that makes sense. I just would think you'd have a horrible case of Groundhog Day.
Yeah, you're going to see the same thing over and over again. I mean, with a 5K race or a 5K course that's going over and over again for 50 times. Well, I guess it wouldn't be 50. It's however many times, you know, whether it's a 50K or a 50-mile race. It's, you know, do the math on that. But I think I would rather run. I mean, there's an ultra marathon in the Sahara Desert. I'm not sure the mileage on it, but that would be very cool, just for a notch in your bedpost. And the guy that owns the Daddy Ultra Runs, forgive me, Christine, I can't remember his first name, but he does crazy stuff.
Yeah. He was invited to that one. It's called Badwater. It's by invite only. You pretty much have to prove that you are just a certified badass, and evidently he is, so they have him out.
Yeah. Well, the stuff that he does is so cool. Well, I was in there this past week getting some running shoes, and he was talking to me about the ultra runs that he does. And, you know, talk about badass. Even the mannequin that's set up in his shop that's dressed up in the attire that you run for the kind of things that he does, that mannequin is a bigger badass than I am.
The mannequin is pretty, like, formidable. I walk in and I'm like, I'm never going to be as cool as this mannequin. Yeah, I feel you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about the shop that we're talking about, if anyone is interested. It's Daddy Ultra Runs in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Or Cocoa, Florida, rather. Not Cocoa Beach. It is slightly different. Let me look up their it's just daddyultraruns.com. So go there and check them out. The telephone number here at the Mo Show, if you would like to be part of the show, is 347-857-2793. Coming up, we're going to talk with Allie from 26.2 CrossFit. And we're going to talk to him about endurance and how endurance plays a part in CrossFit and how CrossFit plays a role in endurance. And myself not being a CrossFitter, I've never been to a gym or a box, and I'm not part of it. I only know what I see online and from talking to other people. But CrossFit, just sort of generally as a rule, has a sort of a stigma about it being just completely infiltrated with meatheads and, you know, and it's dangerous. Those are the two things that immediately pop into mind. Allie is going to completely dispel both of those things for us when we talk to him. But here's kind of a neat thing to talk about real quick before we go in and talk to Allie. And it's a school in San Diego. It's a elementary school in San Diego is incorporating CrossFit into the physical, the phys ed, the gym class structure and part of the day for the kids that go to the school. And I think it's pretty cool. And it's obviously not the same CrossFit, but here is some audio. This is a couple minutes long. It's 2 minutes long. Talking about CrossFit for kids at this school in San Diego.
What is CrossFit for kids in a nutshell? And how is it different from the strenuous CrossFit for adults that we've heard a lot about?
Well, CrossFit Kids is a functional fitness program that's paired with fun. And so it empowers kids to work out, have fun, be safe, and enjoy and develop a lifelong love for fitness.
So it's different than the adult.
It's very different from the adult in that it's designed specifically for kids. The adult is a different beast altogether.
Completely different. Well, tell us specifically maybe some of the exercises and games at a CrossFit program, let's say, at Empower.
Well, the structure for kids would be they would start off with a warm-up, something that they would have fun and get moving. Then we would go to a skill, like an air squat. We would talk about the points of performance for an air squat, how to move safely. And then the kids would do a workout, a 6 to 7 minute workout. And then we would always end the class with a CrossFit Kids game that pairs fitness with fun so that kids leave their workout having had fun and want to come back for more.
That does sound like fun. Maybe some gym should, no. Okay, we'll continue. Demi, why did you choose CrossFit Kids over, let's say, other standard physical education programs?
Well, the main reason was that I saw it happen in my own school when I was a middle school teacher. My coach came and volunteered with my students once a week and taught a CrossFit Kids program. So I got to see the changes that happened just with my own students, both their level, their ability to concentrate in the classroom, the camaraderie that came out as they started cheering for each other, like you see in a lot of CrossFit gyms. And we didn't tell them, hey, clap for each other while they get through a workout, but they just naturally took that on. So after seeing the benefits just with my own students as a teacher, when we started Empower, it had to be part of the program.
So there you go, Christine. CrossFit for Kids. What do you think?
Well, my old box over in Merritt Island had a CrossFit summer camp, and it was freaking awesome. These kids were adorable and excited, and it was super safe because obviously we're using no weight whatsoever. And they had seen their parents, you know, do CrossFit now for years or at least a year, and they were so excited to get in there and do what their parents were doing. So I feel like if you're going to be doing anything, but leading by example with a lifelong passion for fitness, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree completely, and I think it's awesome. I mean, anything that schools can do to just get kids out on the playground and do anything. Do you realize how many schools have even just got rid of recess across the country? Recess doesn't exist anymore at a lot of places, and that's just a crying shame. A funny note, Christine, do you know my entire grammar school career, I only ever failed one class in my entire time going through like K through 8, and that was gym in 8th grade. I failed gym class in 8th grade.
Well, you're in good company. I wasn't that fabulous with gym either. I remember getting like a permanent excuse from my parents not having to dress out or do anything with gym. So I'm not really sure why I grew to love fitness as much as I did when I got older, but I definitely do now.
Yeah, yeah. So to make up the credit, I had to go and take karate. They forced me to go take karate during summer, after 8th grade, and I got kicked out of karate because I was a wise ass, and so I failed gym, was forced to take karate, and then I got kicked out of karate for not behaving properly. That's my
this doesn't surprise me at all in the slightest.
So that's good stuff. CrossFit for Kids. I love the audio there, and it's definitely encouraging the kids are doing that kind of thing. Telephone number here, area code 347-857-2793. Speaking of CrossFit, we have on the air with us right now the owner and proprietor of 26.2 CrossFit here in Florida. Hello, Allie.
Hey, Mark. Christy, how are you?
I'm good. We are so pleased to have you.
You know what? I probably could not have dropped in at a better point in the conversation. We have been working a kids program for the last year and a half, and I just can't tell you how upset I was at the whole pulling recess out of the schools. They're really forcing kids to be left-brained and, in my opinion, causing an autistic-type child. It's honestly sad.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. No, recess was the best part of the day for me when I was growing up. We used to play baseball and handball and kickball, and I would go out and crank up a sweat and, go back to class, and it was awesome. And, you know, that was our generation, and I guess they don't do that anymore. Hey, Allie, the first question I got for you, because you mentioned kids, do you have any kind of hurdles that you have to go through convincing the parents of kids to get involved with CrossFit?
Well, we start our program a little differently than coming at it from the fitness approach because, unfortunately, in the American culture, if you're fit, you're stupid. And that's just the way that everybody looks at people that are truly fit. I pick things up, I put them down. It's a stereotype that they've just tagged with the fit industry. So we actually come at it with a different aspect that by teaching your kids eye-hand coordination, it makes them more apt to learn in a three-dimensional environment, much like when a teacher writes on a whiteboard or a chalkboard. That's a three-dimensional environment, and if you have a two-dimensional or a tablet learner, they are only able to see in two-dimension, and they lose track when the teacher writes on the board. They're accused of having ADD because the teachers are overwhelmed. So we ask that you take your kids and you play catch with them so that they're back into that three-dimensional environment. Eye-hand coordination makes it easier for kids, honestly, to pay attention.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So from a kid's standpoint, has it become a popular part of your gym? How much of your day-to-day stuff is kids?
We put a lot of science in behind it, so the kids caught on pretty quick that we were teaching them stuff, and they weren't real pleased with that. But the parents stand behind it. It's a very small underground part of our programming. We built our Guardian Athlete program to suit high-stress environment profiles like firefighters, cops, air traffic controllers. And we work the system in reverse for them. The goal is to get people working on both hemispheres of their brain. So when they enter a really emotional environment, think about the last time that you got all wound up. You were driving in traffic. You were really emotional. You didn't go into logical thought. We force people into logical thought by having differentiating rep schemes. So they have to think while they're in that emotional environment. And it's made it a lot of fun. It's made the workouts a lot of fun. People lose track of what number they're on. There's less. I have learned swear words in three languages since we started this program.
I can definitely see that. So from the standpoint of left brain, right brain, and three-dimensional learning and that sort of thing, when you're working with the kids, is it just kids or do the kids that have parents that also go to your gym and also train there, train together? So do you have a kid-parent training, or is it just one or the other?
We put them together. That way, the kids and the parents, they get a bonding. And we've got Taylor and Nicole. Taylor came in at 15 years old. We've watched her get her first tattoo. We've watched her really just bloom into a beautiful young lady. And she and her mom have been working out side by side for the last 3 years. It's just... It's a really neat environment to have the two of them in because they've got that that commiseration, like two people that live through a sinking ship. There's a bond between those two people that will never be mimicked and never be, you can't fake that. And it's the two, I believe, are a lot closer because of it. Yeah. But you know what? That's not what we were going to talk about. I'm sorry that I got completely off on my little hobby, but... That's how I play. If you have kids, take your kid and tell them, listen to a secret on the other side of a door. And whatever ear your child puts against the door, make sure that they're sitting with that ear towards the teacher. That's their dominant ear. They're a lot more likely to take in what the teacher has to give if the dominant ear is on that side, and a lot less likely to go flittering off into SpongeBob land.
Right, right.
Sorry, Christine, you were going to ask a question?
Yeah. I was going to say that I love that you were touching on the bond that you form in CrossFit because you're absolutely right. I had, jokingly, I have a girlfriend that when we went to CrossFit together, she became my, because we lifted together, we were each other's, like, spotting partner. I was her horrible counting partner, so I feel bad for her, and I apologize. But it's just a bond that we formed that we feel... Although I'm no longer at that box, I've moved away from that area. We stay in contact constantly. We check in on each other to see how we're doing. And it does seem to form a bond also, very much, Mark, like we had talked about with Ragnar, this CrossFit or just being together during these really difficult in the trenches type fitness does form a bond.
Yeah, and I can definitely say that's true with a lot of different fitness things as well. And we're not going to dive into this subject right now, but GORUCK is a major instance where that happens, where camaraderie and people helping each other out, and, it's not about you, it's about the other person next to you who's struggling. That's one of my favorite things about GORUCK, and I know, Allie, you've been involved a little bit in GORUCK as well. But what we're going to talk about, and sort of the whole thing that Allie does differently than a lot of other CrossFit boxes or CrossFit gyms that are out there is incorporating endurance training with CrossFit and vice versa. So we're going to talk about that. The telephone number here, if you would like to ask Allie a question or be part of the show or comment on anything that we've talked about so far tonight, definitely give us a call. It's area code 347 857-279-3. And I need to point out, unless you're listening to this some other time than March 5th between 7 and 8, if you're listening to this as a podcast in October of 2025, don't bother calling. We're not going to answer. So Allie, talk about endurance with CrossFit. I know that's your thing.
Well, let me tell you a funny story to start the whole thing out. Running was my worst event. It was the thing that I was horrible at. I deadlifted well. I cleaned well. I ringed pretty darn good. But if there was a run and a workout, I was complaining. I wouldn't complain less than 400 meters because I know nobody would put up with it. But anything over that, I was whining. And a gentleman made a bet with me. He wanted me to be on his Ragnar team, and he just would not shut up about it. So one day I bet him that if I beat him in a workout, Michael was the workout, he wouldn't talk any more about it. And it was a run and some sit-ups and some back extensions. I was pretty sure I had them. And that day I learned that my worst event wasn't running. It was gambling because I lost. And so we built the CrossFit gym, the 26.2 CrossFit. We built it on the premise that, you know, there is no running, or at the time there was no running in CrossFit, and there were no runners in CrossFit, and there were no CrossFitters in running. So we thought, hey, let's name the gym 26.2 CrossFit, and we'll get all of them. We'll be beating our door down. And, of course, one thing led to another, and after 5 years we've learned that, well, runners hate CrossFitting and CrossFitters hate running, so essentially anybody that understood the name stayed away. But so we built our premise on getting people to run better. We found that we were working with rescue athletes. We were working with some of the special forces teams, and the guys were incredibly fast. But when they got to the end, they were gassed. So we came upon a premise that we could teach them how to use gravity to their advantage, perpetuate a falling motion, keep stay light on their feet so that they're not allowing their feet to sink into mud or differentiating terrains. If you step in a hole, generally you hyperextend your knee and you limp for days. What we're talking about doing is your time on ground is so brief that if you step in a hole, you just miss the ground and you go around and cycle to the next one. And imagine a horse counting is kind of the way that we cycle our feet. So you're perpetuating a fall. The second strongest force in the universe is gravity. Use that to your advantage. Allow that to pull you along instead of pushing off with every step. It's been a lot of fun, actually. It's a completely different approach than most people have taken from the whole heel, ball, toe thing that we all learned in high school.
Yeah, real quick, you mentioned the gravity and that as a method to run and making running a little bit easier for you. Have you read the book Chi Running by Danny Dreyer?
Absolutely. I've actually taken one of Danny's courses. I borrowed a lot of information from Danny, a lot of his breathing techniques we use, a lot of his hand motion, his shoulder positioning, the body positioning we use, a lot of those. Our changes are minor. We use pose technique as our primary foundation, and that is built on falling into a certain position after each run. The difference that we have over Danny is we have a bigger focus on how your foot falls and how your foot pulls happen, and we have a higher cadence where Danny runs in a high 80, low 90 beat per second cadence. We run high 90s up into 103s, and it translates over into mud run and obstacle courses a lot better in that the more times your feet hit the ground, the less time you're spending on the ground. So if you're running through mud or hay or any soft surface, your foot isn't going to have a chance to sink. And I'm pretty sure all of your listeners, because I know half of the friends that I have that run mud courses have lost a shoe in the mud pit, waiting for some archaeologist in 4,000 years to find it.
Yeah. I am one of those people. My shoes are in a couple of different venues right now. There's stray shoes that are, waiting for a shoe tree to grow from where I've left them. You bring up an interesting point with stride, though, Allie, and I recently discovered in my own running a larger stride, and I've combined increasing my stride with increasing my cadence at the same time, and And this is completely informal. This is just me running down the road. I'm bored. Hey, let me try a bigger stride. Wow, look at what happened. And, you know, when I started doing that, I finally broke the 8-minute mile barrier consistently for 5Ks. And just from increasing my stride. But my question about it, and this is probably something that you have to deal with too, is when you're working with cadence and stride, the biggest issue that I've got is I'm thinking about that too much. And instead of zoning out and getting into my run, I'm counting my steps or I'm paying attention to my stride and not paying attention to what I'm doing. And how do you deal with that?
Well, you've asked 8 to 10 different questions just in that one sentence. And let's define what you're talking about with stride. Your stride length is not a – your stride length doesn't cause you to run faster. It's a correlative of you running faster. And let me give you an example before you try to chew that one up all the way. There's a video of a meltdown in an Idaho power plant where the guy was running through the snow getting away from the power plant that was getting ready to explode. And they measured the distance between his footfalls in the snow at around 10 feet. Now, forgive me, this isn't going to be something that you're going to be able to find the exact measure. It may be exaggerating it a bit. I'm not sure this is the way that I heard the story. It might have been 9 feet, but the point is that the distance between this guy's footfalls was far greater than he could have stretched his legs out to be. That was his stride length, that 9 to 10 feet. Your stride length, the guy was just flat getting it to run away from a power plant, obviously. Your stride length is going to get longer as you go faster. Go run down the beach tomorrow, or tonight if you want. Be a lot harder in the dark. Run down the beach tomorrow, and as you're running, start to lean further and further and further out in front of your feet. Get as far into a lean as you possibly can without changing the range of motion that your knees are traveling. Unfortunately, this is a very visual description. I'm standing in my kitchen doing this thing like I'm kicking in a door. But we don't teach to stretch out your stride length. We try to keep people as range of motion as close in as possible. As you stretch out your stride length, you'll find that you're letting your legs stay on the ground for an awful long time, and you're putting a lot of stress on that back leg and that back hamstring. So we get people to keep a very close range of motion, but by leaning further, and if you look back over the beach, the further you lean, the further the distance will be between your strides. So your stride length increases with speed, not necessarily stretching your legs out. Stretching your legs out, you're putting a lot more effort into running otherwise. To shorten up your time, you will, by changing your method, your time will drop and then plateau. And once you plateau and you can't get yourself to go any better, come see us and we'll talk you through and fix and tweak a couple of things to rubber band you into quicker times. We give people lots of stuff to think about because the goal is to occupy your brain. The advent of people running with headphones was a huge thing because it kept people's minds off of running. Because if you let it, and you know with GORUCK, once you let the suck in, you can't get it out. So whatever you can do to occupy your brain to keep the suck clowns from catching you, take it.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're the most popular phrase that I've ever taken away from GORUCK is embrace the suck, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
It truly is. You once it gets in, if you don't learn to enjoy it, it's going to tear you up. But as far as I believe, you want to keep your stride length. Your stride length is going to change with your speed. But we try to keep you as contained as possible so that you can keep that quick turnover. The faster your feet, the quicker, you know, the less time your feet spend on the ground, the less likely you are to get injured. And I'd love to show you this one. Take a look, if you get a chance, look up either Dr. Romanoff or Brian McKenzie. Those are two really popular pose instructors. Brian McKenzie is very flamboyant and talks very, he's got tattoos and he's cool looking. But a lot of his videos talk about that exact thing that you're talking about, the quick changeover of feet and staying within a certain area.
Ellie,
was that
what
way
exactly
too much information?
No, 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 not at all. It was a great answer. But in your answer, though, there's one word that I'm not sure in this vernacular what it means. Could you tell me what pose means in the way that you're using it? What's a pose in this case?
I apologize. Pose is a method of running, much like chi is a method of running, or the run-walk methodology. Pose is, and it doesn't just apply to running. Dr. Romanoff was a Russian running or a Russian track and field coach, and he got sent out to coach the Russian runners. And at the time, the way that people coached runners was go run 800 meters. Okay, go run 800 meters faster. Okay, go run 800 meters faster. And Romanoff was one of the first guys that actually sat down and said, you know what, there's got to be a form. And if we can teach this form, we can make people faster. So he started to study the form of running, and that's where pose technique came up, was it's an actual form of running. And Danny touches a lot on the different aspects of the pose technique and the pose running. He doesn't reference to it. I know that Danny and Dr. Romanoff have chatted, and the discussion between them is fun. But look Dr. Romanoff up online for running on ice, and he will explain to you how you don't need to push off to run. You can do it all with just gravity pulling you along and you lifting your feet. And just for a moment, think about, let's say you weigh 200 pounds. If you weigh 200 pounds, your foot probably weighs 2 pounds. Think about running a race, let's say a 5K, and you do 1,000 footfalls. What would be easier as a human being, to push 200 pounds 1,000 times or to lift 2 pounds 1,000 times? Of course, it would be far easier to lift 2 pounds. So the theory is that you lean forward and lift your feet rather than settling back and pushing your butt.
Man, I almost want to just leave this right now and just go out and run and try this out. Real quick, you're listening to The Mo Show. The telephone number here if you want to get in and ask Allie a question. We've got a real treat guest with us, and if you have a question for him, Allie knows what he's talking about, and I know he would love to hear from you. The telephone number is area code 347-857-2793. And our co-host, Christine Hetzel, is back there. Keeping quiet. She's at Bike Week in Daytona. Christine, see, Allie, typically Christine and I are on a chat off air where we can tell each other that we want to say something or, you know, let me ask the next question or whatever. But since she's up there in Daytona at Bike Week, we don't have that luxury. So I've kind of been hogging it all. Christine, anything that you want to add into this conversation? I know you've probably got a bunch of stuff. And,
I am. I think we need a full hour with Allie to be 100% honest.
I agree.
It's truly fascinating stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I can't wait till the podcast so I can write down all this information he's giving us. let me think. Allie, I know that you do a yearly contest, right? You're doing it the second year. It's a CrossFit running kind of hybrid competition. It usually is, what, around June?
We do, the contest we host is called Pura Vida, Pure Life, and it is a culmination of many different events. It's got a two-mile run in it, which makes it famous in the CrossFit community because most CrossFit events don't have a run. And it's just, you know, it's called a competition just because I'm a little dense and I don't have a better word. But it's honestly just a collection of all the different CrossFit gyms in the area. We all just get together and just pretty much play. I mean, some of the events this year are going to be a bicycle toss. We'll have, I believe there's going to be some sort of a strongman Atlas stone over a bar lift. It's a bunch of us getting together who have spent the last year, you know, honing our skills at overall fitness, just going out and playing and showing off. Our goal as a gym is to help people do what they want to do. I mean, have you ever been sitting, well, I'm sure you guys haven't because you've been in the fitness industry, but any of your listeners, if you're sitting on the couch thinking, man, I sure wish I could keep up with the kids, or I sure wish I could go run a 5K, or I sure wish, well, you know what, get up. That's what we do.
Yeah,
at
exactly.
26.2 CrossFit, we help you do those things, and this is a competition for everybody. You know, from a couch potato to a military athlete, everybody can do this and have fun with this competition in Cocoa Village. And it's our, wow, it's going to be, I think, our fourth one. Might be our third. Might be exaggerating.
I know I was at that you guys did, but do you want to touch on that a little bit too? Since you kind of just played on it a little bit, how that's one of the highlights of CrossFit is that it is scaled to your specific fitness level. So you're not going to go in there and have to do 135-pound squats off the bat if that's not where you're at.
Oh, no, absolutely not. That's, Kirstie, that's perfectly correct. It's CrossFit isn't set up for you to go a distance. Like, they're not going to have you doing a 2-mile run or a 5-mile run. It's more set to a metabolic state. You want to achieve a state of wellness inside of you, and your state is different than my state. So instead of making you run a 5K, we would have you run from the gym for 15 minutes, turn around and come back. So you'd get the same level of workout that an Olympic runner would get. You wouldn't do the same distance, but you would both come back receiving the same level of improvement in your body. So the goal with CrossFit has always been not crazy workouts or dangerous lifts or expensive coaching. CrossFit has always been focused on helping people get better, helping people do what they always wanted to do. And to achieve that, yep, every single workout is scalable. You do a deadlift with 25 pounds. You know, if you can pick a pencil up off of the ground and put it on the top shelf, you can do a deadlift, a clean and jerk, and a shoulder press. That's what those motions are. It's been everyday motions since the Olympians were on the earth. Not the Olympians that have been traveling around. I mean Mount Olympus Olympians.
Yeah. Just real quick here, we're slowly running out of time. We've got about 2.5 minutes left here of this week's Mo Show. Our guest, if you have tuned in at some point in the middle of the show, is Allie. Allie is the owner and proprietor of 26.2 CrossFit in Cocoa, and we're all down here in Florida. If you would like to try to squeak in a phone call here in the last couple of minutes of the show, it is area code 347-857-2793. Every show we do is available as a podcast just a few minutes once the show ends, and you can go and download all of those and listen to them all live or just stream them at mofit.com. Allie, your website is 26.2crossfit.com. Do you want to give we've got about a little under 2 minutes left. Just talk about your box and where it is and how people can find you and, you know, why you're so awesome.
Oh, that's my favorite thing to talk about. I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. we're in Rockledge, Florida. We're off of Barton Boulevard behind Burger King. If, for those of you that are runners, it's 300 meters on the right-hand side. For those of you that are lifters, it's 3 blocks down. Turn right at the big building with the tire in front of it. We are 4-plus years in business. We were the third CrossFit gym in the county to open. As a coach, once I got my CrossFit certification, I spent a year in the original CrossFit gym, Harbor City CrossFit in Melbourne, coaching under coaches that were trained by the original Coach Glassman, trained Mike Manning, his wife, JB and Kathy. These were the people that taught me how to coach, how to CrossFit. After a year there, opened my gym and maintained that high level of education. We use CrossFit as a baseline, so that once you get good at all aspects of fitness, if you choose to get better at one certain event, strongman, running, whichever, we've got coaches that can specialize you in that. You can find us on 26.2crossfit.com. It's 26POINT2CrossFit.com. Or you can email us at 26.2CrossFit@gmail.com.
Awesome. Hey, Allie, I really loved having you on the show. And hopefully we can have you on the show again in the future for longer or just to pick up and do it some more. We're on every Thursday at 7. Do definitely tune in and give us a call. Next week we'll be on again. And the following week after that, we're going to have Duncan J on. Talk about aquatic health rehab. See y'all later. The Mo Show, MoFit.com.